Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 5th day of May, 2020. Cinco de Mayo for people who want to celebrate Mexican holidays that aren't celebrated in Mexico, but not me. I'm not interested. I'm an American, damn it. Welcome to the program. My name is Derek Hunter. I appreciate you listening, downloading, tuning in, telling a friend, pushing play, whatever else you got to do to get this inside your gray matter. Right in through your ears we slide, and you need to got some wax in there, okay? Let's do something about that. Anyway, we've got a lot on the plate today. We're going to talk to Ramesh Ponnaru of National Review and the American Enterprise Institute about the halfway point of this program, about the ever-evolving case against Joe Biden and the Joe Biden problems and the difference, most importantly, between the way that the reportage has gone in regards to Tara Reid and Joe Biden and Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford. She's just a horrible person. Just a horrible person. I will not do an impression of Christine Blasey Ford. I don't remember. I just need two doors. She really is like a Stoner Valley girl. Still burned into my head forever. So we're going to talk about that. I want to thank everybody for the emails. It was a big hit yesterday, the interview with Paul in China. It was it's one for the books, one you want to share on social media and all that stuff. So please keep doing that. I found it very interesting. I was thinking going into it, like, who in the hell? I don't know. What if this guy doesn't really know what he's talking about? What if he doesn't know the area? What if he doesn't know the issues? He knew. He knew it all. And it was a good conversation. It's nice to get, especially an American view of what's going on from overseas, because you can talk to somebody who, you know, lives in another country, is a citizen of that country, and they have kind of a weird view that you won't necessarily be able to relate to of America. But an American does, and Paul brought it. So thanks to him, and thanks to all of you who complimented him. And Paul, if you're listening over in China, there were a lot of compliments for you. So there you go. It's just weird how this stuff comes together. Just got an email, said, I'm in China. And he proved it. And I said, all right, let's try it. And I was really thinking it would probably be about a half hour, maybe 20 minutes. And we went the whole time because I found it that interesting. So there you go. Before we get started, let me give you a word about ancientlifeoil.com. Can you hear that? That's my bottle of CBD oil, the cinnamon. It is amazing stuff, but you know, you've heard me talk about it. You don't have to take my word for it. Just search CBD oil benefits. See what people are saying. Talk to some of your friends or your family members. You'd probably be surprised to who's using CBD oil and why. And then you find out that, you know, it's not just me. And it's not just me saying it because they're a sponsor. It's me because I do it, I use it, and it's me saying it because it works, because it's true. You go to ancientlifeoil.com. They have 100% pure organic CBD oil. It's not loaded with THC. It's not going to get you high. You don't have to worry about your company drug test. All it'll do is work. It'll relieve your stress. It'll take away the aches and pains. It'll make you sleep better. Just really does make a big improvement. My eye strain at the end of the day is brutal, and I put a little bit of CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com under my tongue, and it goes away, and it helps me sleep. It's wonderful. At checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, and you get free fast shipping. And they're already having massive sale on top of everything else. So you get savings upon savings upon savings, and you help the show. The circle of life continues. Lord knows we've got enough stress right now. We could use a little bit of stress relief. All righty, let's get into it. First off, I just want to ask you guys a question here, because I'm not sure anybody, like, I appreciate the spirit. I really do, that they're showing. But Bloomberg Business is reporting that Carnival Cruises is ready to get started and going again on August 1st. And I'm not sure who's going to want to go on a cruise ship. No offense. I've never been on a cruise ship. I'm not a cruise ship kind of guy. I like history. I like World War II history. I like, medieval European history. I like castles and stuff. And hot, sweaty weather doesn't really do it for me. So I've never been a Caribbean guy, never made a pilgrimage to the beach. When we go to the beach in the summer, it's because there's a little kids' amusement park there. And not that I like to hang out with little kids. I just like to take my kids there. Oh, by the way, thanks to all the notes about Quinn singing the alphabet. She's got that thing down, doesn't she? So we go to the beach because there's this little amusement park there in Rehoboth Beach. But a cruise ship has never really floated my boat, if you can forgive that one. But I appreciate the spirit that they're showing here and the ingenuity, it's desperation, really. But you know what? Oftentimes that breeds innovation and it helps kickstart something. I always say somebody's got to go first. Somebody's got to do something first after this outbreak, before anybody else sort of gets involved and goes into town, you know, goes all in. Before, I don't think there are going to be that many people lined up to be the first person at a restaurant, right? I just don't. So they're trying to entice people to be the first person into that restaurant. And they're doing it with $28 a night fares. Now, I assume that's pretty good, because that'd be pretty good for like a no-tell motel off the freeway for a night. But 28 bucks a night with all your food included, Bloomberg Business has a story. Carnival Corporation plans on resuming sailing on August 1st, becoming the first major cruise operator in the United States to outline return to operations after coronavirus outbreaks on several ships shuttered the industry. The company's flagship Carnival brand said Monday it will restart initially from Galveston, Texas, and Miami and Port Canaveral, Florida. I assume that's near Cape Canaveral, I guess. Departures from other home ports in North America and Australia are canceled through August 31st, and other pauses will last longer. With several states starting to reopen their economies, the company is offering discounts of as little as $28 a day to get customers back. Still, many questions linger about the safety of cruising when the industry shut down in mid-March. Coronavirus outbreaks at sea wreaked havoc by trapping passengers, some of whom died, and placing demands on local healthcare systems at a critical time in the pandemic. I don't really know that you can blame the cruise ships for that part. But it is really going to be we'll have more signs long, but God, I hope we have more signs of the economy reopening before August 1st, things getting going before August 1st. But this will be a big one, I think, because you can get a 5-day cruise from like $139 a person, which I've looked into cruises, because here right up the road in Baltimore, you've got one of them. I don't know, one of the cruise lines. It might be Carnival. Who knows? Sitting there, so you don't have to drive. I hate flying, despise flying, so you don't have to fly there. I would like to, if I were to do a cruise, it would be probably pretty pleasant. You drive up and you park and you get right on the boat. No flying involved. But I don't know how many people are going to be lining up to do that, considering the torment that some of the passengers went through. Now, don't get me wrong, the torment was not the fault of the cruise lines at all. The torment was the fault of the virus. You can't blame a cruise line for that, even though it probably led to some pretty bad Yelp reviews. But hey, what are you going to do? I find it interesting, and I'm curious if this is going to work, if this industry can work, unless and until this thing either sort of recedes back into nature, the hole that it crawled out of, or there's some kind of vaccine. Couldn't blanked on the word vaccine. Unless there's some kind of vaccine to go along with it. I don't know. I haven't even talked about the topic with my wife, because she's not really a cruise person either, but I can't imagine her going, yeah, let's do it, $139 for 5 days, mostly because there's nowhere I want to go. That, like, ooh, we can go to the Caribbean and be really hot and sweaty and see giant mosquitoes and stuff. So, anyway, good luck to them. I think that it's somebody's got to do it, and they definitely need to stay in business and want to stay in business. But I just don't see that happening right out of the gate, even though the gate is still several months away. In Joe Biden news, before I talked to Ramesh already, and this was not available at the time, but I find this interesting, and it doesn't bode well for Democrats. But again, I always say if the election were held today, everybody would be really surprised, because it's not November 3rd. So take this for what it's worth. But the Morning Consult poll, they polled a bunch of Democrats, and they found that 1 in 4, after watching Joe Biden's denial about Tara Reid on Morning Joe last Friday, the only time he's ever been asked about it, and the only time he's ever addressed it himself, 1 in 4, 25%, actually 26% of Democrats said the party should replace him. That's pretty big. It's not super huge in that, you know, it would wipe out his chances, but that's pretty big. And if Republicans are able to exploit that, and Democrats are unable, and Biden in particular is unable to come up with some kind of answer as to why it's okay, why he should be treated differently than Brett Kavanaugh, than anybody else, if they can't come up with something, it's really going to do some damage. The under 45 had a bigger problem with it than the over 45 crowd, which is what Joe Biden is already having a problem with. 40% of Democrats, these are Democrats under the age of 45, said the party should pick a different nominee. This is damning. Now, they were only shown a 35-second clip of him saying, no, it's not, quote, this is what he said, no, it's not true. I'm saying unequivocally, it never happened. It didn't. It never happened. They did not. They were not interested in Joe Biden. Now, it's kind of funny, because when they come down to men versus women, more men found Joe Biden to be credible than women, which is interesting. 56% of Democratic women found Joe Biden to be credible in his denial, where 69% of men did. Now, this is the party of wokeness. This is the party of believe all women. This is the party of feminism. And, oh, we're going to, they were all set to nominate another woman. They nominated the first woman to run for president. They're so proud of themselves. And the men are like, yeah, dude, I believe you. There's no way. She's not good looking enough. It is, it's not a good thing for Joe, because the difference in the generation gap in the Democratic Party is what's really interesting. As far as finding Joe Biden's denial credible, if you're over 45 Democrats, 67% said it was very or somewhat credible. Under 45, 53%. That's a big, now it's still more than half on both, but that's a pretty big generational gap right there. Doesn't bode well for Joe, who needs the younger people to show up. He desperately needs the younger people to show up. Somehow these people go crazy for Bernie Sanders. I don't get it. Bernie Sanders is absolutely nuts. But anybody else, they're not interested in him. And the problem for Democrats is the indoctrination machine that they've created in the public school system and in colleges is churning out people like this who have been trained. They bought in to the Brett Kavanaugh line, believe all women. He is a scumbag because somebody accused him of something. No evidence, no nothing, nothing to back it up. Doesn't matter. They bought into that. It was very, very useful to Democrats 2 years ago. Wildly useful to Democrats 2 years ago. They took back the House of Representatives in part based on this. Those people and that energy of outrage and how dare you and we must protect women and blah. And now their candidate has their own problems, the very same problems. This is the problem with pointing fingers. As they say, there's always four fingers pointing back at you. You should really curl up your fingers so they're more pointing towards the back of your hand, which then points to a side like at a 90 degree angle. Then you're not pointing at yourself. But it's very telling that these people have no idea. The Democratic Party establishment has a massive, massive disconnect between itself and its future. Now, don't get excited. It's not that younger Democrats are more pragmatic or more centrist or more sane. It's quite the opposite. In fact, they will, you know, if Joe Biden came to their college campus or if Joe Biden were asked to speak at their commencement event, they would protest it. They would go absolutely crazy. They have gone further to the left, that they've lapped the rest of the party. But it's telling because they're going to have to find a way to calm these people down and get these people to the polls. To have a chance of winning, they're going to need each and every one of them. And everything that they've spent time doing and building up over the past, not just the last 4 years, but the last 20 years, has been to unleash this monster, this angry mob on Republicans. But as I always say, Frankenstein's monster always returns to the castle to burn it down. And they're learning that the hard way. That they can't live up to their own standards that they set only for Republicans. They only wanted these standards to apply to Republicans. And now they're, thanks to sniffy, gropey, rubby, gross Uncle Joe, they're having a bit of a reckoning. How will they overcome it? I don't know, because you can't speak rationally to these young people. The accusation is enough to ruin people's lives, to even turn on their own. You can never be woke enough unless you're all the way woke. And then you still have to get woker. I don't know how you make Joe Biden at 78 years old or whatever the hell he is any more woke than he already is, which he really isn't because I don't think he understands what the hell that means. So this will be interesting to watch because they're going to have to... they're going to have to find a way to address this. As a matter of fact, let's go to the Ramesh interview, and we'll come back after that, since I talked about Joe Biden, and the interview with Ramesh is about Joe. It'd just be weird to go to something else and then come back to it. So here's Ramesh Ponnaru. Okay, as we've been doing throughout the pandemic and throughout the news, we've been talking to people around the world and getting their input on the news of the day. Yesterday, we talked to an American living in China. Now we talk to an American living in the United States of Washington, D.C. It's Ramesh Ponnaru, senior editor at National Review, columnist for Bloomberg Opinion, and visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, as well as a contributor to CBS News. He needs four business cards to fit all this stuff on it. Ramesh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it. I wanted to talk to you today because you've been tweeting out articles you've written in the past. It's not very often that, you know, an article anybody has written a couple of years ago becomes relevant again, but they become relevant in regards to current news in the case of Joe Biden, I guess you could say, and Tara Reid. You wrote pretty extensively about the background and the Brett Kavanaugh case.
Let's talk a little bit about the Brett Kavanaugh case and the case you make quite convincingly that it was not news. It was not a story, and it should not have gotten the type of coverage. Not that it shouldn't have gotten attention, but it shouldn't have gotten the type of attention that you got. At the time in 2008, when you first heard the allegations about Brett Kavanaugh from Dr. Blase Ford, as I like to call her, you did you get pause? Did you think, wait a second, what's going on here? Like most people, you want to hear more? Or did you immediately think, this something smells funny about this, especially with the timing?
Well, I'll tell you the thing, and this was maybe a little bit of an idiosyncratic reaction on my part. The thing that really struck me was Kavanaugh's initial response, which was so unequivocal. This never happened. It wasn't, because remember, it was very murky at the beginning. We didn't have a lot of detail, but he didn't say, you know, I have a totally different recollection of that. He didn't make it into a differing interpretations thing. He just flatly said, this never happened. Haven't met, haven't been at anything with her. And if any facts had come out that contradicted him on even these secondary, tertiary points, it would have been totally fatal to his cause. And that, I think, made me more willing to believe him because he'd sort of given a hostage to fortune.
Right. He'd essentially, if somebody had produced as much as a photograph of the two of them near one another in high school, that could have been it. He denied knowing who she was, essentially. And there's since never been really anybody to come forward to say that they were ever in the same zip code at the same time. So you're right in that sense. And I kind of want to hop back and forth between the Kavanaugh story and the Biden story, because there is no denying that they knew each other, or at least, you know, as much as an employee, a junior employee, can know a senator. But in that sense, what did you make of Biden's denial relative to Kavanaugh's denial?
Well, the Biden denial that he knew Tara Reid, or that he remembers Tara Reid, is at best evidence that he's getting on in years. He's met a lot of people and he's forgotten some of them. But what you have in the Reid case, you have an undeniable link between the two of them that you didn't have in the Blasey Ford Kavanaugh case. So that is one element of credibility that is present in, for the Tara Reid allegation that wasn't there for the Blasey Ford one.
And the interest, you know, I don't begrudge Biden not remembering. You know, I worked for Senator Conrad Burns of Montana as a press secretary in his last year in the Senate, and I can't remember half the staff. And, you know, I was there for 1 year, and I can't imagine he remembers everybody who worked for him. But the difference is Biden as a Democrat is sort of already painted, not into a corner, but certainly near a corner, in that he couldn't come out and denounce the allegations, renounce saying these were absolutely untrue at the very beginning, do you think, or could he have?
Well, judging from the way he's been received, I think he probably could have. I mean, there's, you know, there's sort of a limit on what he could have said in terms of criticizing his accuser. But what we've seen, I think, again and again in the reporting of the Reid accusation is that people are registering lots of context, are mentioning a lot of things on both sides of the credibility question, and are basically coming at this with a degree of objectivity that they didn't muster in the Kavanaugh affair.
Would you really call it objectivity, though? Because it's skepticism. And I don't view skepticism as objectivity.
Standard, let's say. It's at least a very different standard. I think that the standard that they're applying to Biden is a more defensible standard than the one they applied to Kavanaugh. But what's indefensible is the gap between the two.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. As you watch the coverage of the two, is there anything in particular that leaps out at you as being particularly egregious?
Well, in the Kavanaugh case, the there were so many things, it's hard to even pick one out.
I'm talking about the people in particular, Kirsten Powers.
You know,
or
I just,
Maisie Hirono.
You just hear, you just see a lot of reporters and journalists and commentators saying things like, well, you know, she has said positive things, Tara Reid, that is, about Vladimir Putin. I don't recall anybody doing a deep dive into Blasey Ford's political views. And the fact that she deleted most of her social media presence didn't seem to give anybody any pause back then.
No, she essentially did not exist online for that period of time. And there certainly was no questions about it.
And it wasn't until afterward that her lawyer said, and that it came out that her lawyer said that one of the reasons for coming forward was to put an asterisk by now Justice Kavanaugh's name in case the Supreme Court revisited its abortion cases.
And that's true. And of course, she didn't just hire any lawyer, as most people would do. You think, oh, I'm going to send a, first of all, if you're going to send a letter, you just send a letter. You don't consult attorneys necessarily. But if you do, I'm not sure you go to a high-powered Democratic-linked law firm on the other side of the country when you live in California. I would think that you would consult, I don't know, a local attorney would be my guess. But back to the Blasey Ford reporting, it was interesting to me that so much, one of the things that stuck out to me, I guess I should say, was the arguments that they used in an attempt to try to delay the hearing and especially the vote. It was, she was terrified of flying, if you remember that one. And her lawyers had told the committee she was terrified of flying, and therefore, if she was going to come from California, she would have to drive. And so you would need a week to do that, at least. Then when she testified, it was, she said, I'm not afraid of flying. She had just flown, in fact, out to the East Coast to vacation with her family. And what was telling about that is she didn't then immediately turn to her lawyers and say, what the hell? I'm not afraid to fly. What are you telling people I'm afraid to fly for? That, to me, didn't get enough play in the media because that was obviously not true. And
there wasn't a lot of journalistic follow-up on that point either, right?
No, there was no quality.
She didn't say it. Just no reporters went back to the lawyers and said, hey, what gives?
Well, that's kind of common cause, isn't it? Julie Swetnick is not being hounded right now for proof of the gang rape parties, and Debbie Ramirez is not being hounded as to how she couldn't remember something for 30 plus years, and then suddenly she remembers that Brett Kavanaugh dropped trowel at a party in a room full of people, and she's the only person who remembers it.
Well, or CNN, a lot of people have forgotten this ridiculous incident with a report of an alleged Kavanaugh offense in Rhode Island, and CNN reported on it an hour after it had been retracted. Didn't note the recantation of the accuser, who was suffering from some mental issues.
So when you see Democrats like Kirsten Gillibrand of New York say, I believe Joe Biden, and Governor Whitmer up in Michigan say, I believe Joe Biden. It's not the Joe Biden that I know, or Stacey Abrams. I'm not sure how much FaceTime the failed gubernatorial candidate from Georgia and minority leader in the House actually got with the vice president, so I'm not sure how much she knew him. But when you see people
like that, she aspires to more.
Oh, I know. I know she does. I've never seen anybody audition for the job of vice president before. But when she talks about, it's not the vice president, this is not the Joe Biden that I know. How much do you know Joe Biden as a nobody backbencher down in Georgia? But is there a possibility of a paying a price for this hypocrisy? I just don't see it. The people who hold them accountable are cheering them.
Yeah. So just one point on that, not the Joe Biden I know thing. Anytime anybody stood up to be a character reference for Kavanaugh in 2018, the response from people was, well, it's nice that he didn't rape you, but that has no bearing on how he treated this other person. I'm not hearing people pounce on Governor Whitmer and others who are trying to make this same kind of defense. I think they are going to pay for it. At least I think it is harder for them to dismiss this case precisely because of what they all said in 2018. And that's what Kavanaugh was saying. Everybody took this out of context and distorted what he said when he said, you'll reap the whirlwind of coming after me this way. This is part of what he's saying. if you want to maintain that you can't have any critical standards for evaluating an accusation, at some point, somebody's going to make an accusation against you.
The mantra of the Democratic Party during the Kavanaugh hearings, after they'd closed and then Feinstein had leaked this letter from Ford, was, we just need an investigation. We need time. If we could just have a week. Remember that Jeff Flake was crying and brought to tears by Chris Coons in the cloakroom and cornered in the elevator and yelled at by two women who claimed to be survivors. And nobody ever really followed up to find out whether or not their stories were true. But they were heralded as heroes because Jeff Flake had switched his vote and said he needed a week to give the FBI time to look into it. The FBI actually did look into this. They found nothing. And immediately the Democrats said that investigation was not thorough enough. It was rushed. It was only a week. They'd gotten what they wanted, and then it wasn't enough. But they talked to everybody who was allegedly there, who Ford had told them would be a source of information for this, and they had nothing. The difference with Tara Reid is the New York Times, for example, called for the Democratic Party to do an investigation into their presumptive nominee. How do you think that's going to go over?
Yeah, right. The evidence of the Blasey Ford case got weaker over time, the more we learn. The evidence in the Reid case has gotten a little bit stronger. So we've got we now know that in 1993, her mother seems to have called into Larry King, and without providing all the details, at least has backed up the idea that there was a problem. The idea, the New York Times really, I think, just beclowned itself by editorially saying, this is not a job for journalists. It's too important for us. It's a job for the Democratic National Committee. Only the Democratic National Committee can be trusted to vet the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party for president. It's just, you have to wonder, you'd think that they could run it by somebody before they published it, just to ask how it sounded. You know, maybe
that would be like the LA Times back in the day saying, you know what, the district attorney could not possibly investigate this case. We're going to have to let OJ find the real killers. It just doesn't seem, it doesn't pass the laugh test. Yet this is where they are. It's tough to know whether or not they actually, the Democratic establishment, is fully behind Joe Biden, or they don't want to throw him out of the plane. They just hope he kind of falls out of it.
Yeah, there. I think they've got some substantial misgivings. You know, this is the sort of thing, though, where it could turn out that the timing of it is in a way just wrong. Because the Democrats aren't panicked about Biden because he's doing fine in the polls, but this could continue to eat away to a point where he is very badly hurt and it's too late to do anything about it.
I've always said that Joe Biden is a great candidate in the abstract. The less people see of him, the more they like of him.
He seems to agree.
Well, yeah, I know. He's not fumbling over his own words. There are a lot of people who don't like Donald Trump as a person, but think maybe he's doing fine as president. But if somebody else could come in and do fine as president who they liked as a person, they might vote for him. And the more they see of Joe Biden, they go, oh, my God, he's not really there. Or he's got some serious problems that nobody wants to address. So he likes to stay hidden in his basement. When you watched that basement interview on MSNBC on Friday on Morning Joe, I thought Mika did a fine job. There were some questions that could have been asked that weren't, but that's the case with every interview. How has he, from a putting this behind him, or at least starting to put this behind him standpoint, in even the eyes of the liberal media, how well did he serve his cause on Friday?
I don't think he put it away. I don't think he closed the sale, even with the press. He didn't give them enough to declare this, you know, asked, answered. He created a set of procedural questions now in terms of getting access to his records. That is just going to be a reason for this story to stay in the news for who knows how long. So, no, I don't think that this was well handled.
In all your years of journalism, have you ever seen reporters actually do robust reporting on a story they did not want to report on?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I think that gets to the exact problem. I mean, the answer is no. And it's a question of what counts as a credible story, what counts as an interesting story, what is the one we're going to devote a bunch of reporters to and a lot of time to, even if it comes up empty, and which is the one, well, we're just going to wait and see what happens. And we know exactly the way that the press is handling this one. No stone was worth not overturning in the case of the Kavanaugh accusation. Yep.
I love the Biden campaign's original talking point was that the New York Times had thoroughly investigated this and found no evidence, cleared Joe Biden, when in fact 2-3 days was it after the New York Times story that the Media Research Center found the clip of the Larry King call from her mother. And like, well, they couldn't have looked too thoroughly into the story if they didn't find something that was broadcast on national television in the time frame she gave the world. So
to the Times' credit, it said that the Biden campaign was misrepresenting what it had said.
Eventually, yes, but they did allow the Biden campaign to sort of have editorial power post publication, but editorial power over the we found no other evidence aside from, you know, the groping, the kissing, the sniffing, the rubbing and things like that. The line that the Biden campaign wanted removed. Has there been one line, forget the Trump administration, has there been one line in a story that was edited at the behest of any Republican that you can remember in the New York Times in the last 10 years?
If there was, I can guarantee you there was a struggle that preceded it. It was not, of course, sorry about that.
So going forward with Biden now, we have a situation where the Senate sergeant at arms says he can't go through the records because they're confidential, they're confidential information. Biden seems confused as to how opening up his records for a name search at the University of Delaware would go. Are they still banking on this just going away? Tara Reid was supposed to be on Fox News Sunday and canceled, she says, because of threats. People have their own theories for that, but threats are just as plausible, which threats that aren't getting any sort of coverage, whereas any criticism of Blasey Ford was immediately reported as an affront to humanity. Is there a possibility that Joe just kind of keeps quiet and this rumbles on, but it goes away like thunder in the distance?
I think that is unlikely. I'm sure they would love for it to happen. But I just think that this is going to be a continuing story. And the question of access to records is one that is hard for reporters to just totally take a pass on.
That's what I found funny is Joe Biden's answer about his opening up of his archives at the University of Delaware was there are things in there like position papers and speeches I gave, things that could be taken out of context. Well, first of all, you're running for president of the United States. How dramatically have your positions changed? And what are you telling people that you don't want the public to hear? And secondly, you're alive. Theoretically, you could provide all the context you would want to an eager media to give it all the context you want. Am I wrong in that? What do you make of that defense?
And I believe that there was even a comment about not wanting to relitigate past votes. The votes are all public record anyway. Right. You know, like you've got to be willing to stand or fall on them as it is.
Well, you either believe something or you don't. And if you changed over time, which Joe Biden has, he used to be an advocate for the Hyde Amendment, for example. Now he wants to get rid of the Hyde Amendment and have taxpayers pay for all abortions, essentially. He's going to have to answer for that. So it really does make you wonder what is in those papers that he doesn't want you to see. And having worked in the Senate, those records would include meetings, who was there, who sat in on it, possibly who had facilitated it, Joe Biden's family, including his children, have been accused of taking advantage of his positions to enrich themselves over time. It could be that there's a lot of other things he doesn't want in there to come out.
You know, I suspect there's also just a general kind of caution, like, well, who knows? We haven't fully looked over all of this and figured out what possible issues could arise. But it's hard to imagine any of it would be worse than what's happening to him now.
Right. And the what do you make of the argument that David Axelrod was making over the weekend that, hey, the Obama team had lawyers go through everything about Joe Biden's past. If there was anything in there, Barack Obama would never have chosen him, and we would have found it.
Yeah, well, they didn't find, right, the Tara Reid's mother comments. They didn't, you know, like, stuff, nobody does a full job of this, and there's always the possibility that new things come to light. So, no, you can't just take their word on it from 2008.
No, and the Obamas allowed their daughter to intern for Harvey Weinstein. So
yeah,
let's not
point.
Pretend that they're the best at doing background searches. Back to the Kavanaugh pieces that you've written and the juxtaposition there. The feminist groups, the women's groups, and Hollywood could not stop talking about how awful Brett Kavanaugh was. Believe all women, immediately believe women. And a lot of people were falsely accused in that. They've been strangely, they're not silent. There are some who are walking as though they're walking through a room, a tile floor with marbles all over it, but they are in there. At what point does the worry of damage to their credibility override their loyalty to party and the activist wing of the Democratic Party?
Well, you know, having started my journalistic career during the Clinton years, I'm not sure that it ever overcomes that. Because remember, the feminists were willing to defend Bill Clinton through everything. When Kathleen Wiley accused him of having taken liberties with her when she was looking for a job and her husband had just passed away, Gloria Steinem famously wrote an op-ed for the New York Times saying, well, he desisted when she said no. And I believe in Vanity Fair, somebody called it the one free grope rule that Steinem was outlining there. And, you know, as much as one would like to say that in the long run, it really hurt feminist credibility and set back their movement, you do have to wonder, did it really? I mean, it's not like many people, you know, except for the two of us, calls them on it.
No, that's true. It's a lot like having a sports team that you like with a villain that is reviled around the league. Like, well, he's on my team. He's wearing my uniform. So you can forgive just about anything unless they're traded or leave as a free agent. And then you're free to hate them like everybody else. But the difference between Kavanaugh, and, well, there's many differences between the Kavanaugh and the Biden situation, is Biden doesn't seem to really understand the situation he finds himself in, to my mind. He gets that what he's accused of, but are you sure he understands the seriousness of the charge? Because there is more he could do. He could be more forthcoming. He could have gone 6 weeks or not gone 6 weeks without even releasing a statement from him, for example. He seemed to think that if he just remained quiet, it would go away. And the snowball effect of more corroborating evidence and neighbors and things came out to the point that he couldn't. Whereas a Lanny Davis model, for example, which nobody in the Democratic Party seems to follow, is get it all out there as quickly as possible. Even if you don't know anything, get out there on the record saying you don't know anything. He seems to be fumbling his way through this.
Well, that's not uncharacteristic of the Biden we have been watching the last 2 years now. He isn't performing at the same level that he was, you know, years ago, and he always had difficulty in maintaining focus, let's say. So, you know, this is a case where there's sort of there's several layers of this problem. There's the underlying accusation, there's the uncertainty about the truth of the accusation, but then there's also the question of how deftly he can handle it, even if it is untrue.
In the veep stakes that are going on Is there any, I mean, it's going to be, it was supposed to be, you know, by summer. They seem to be more pressed for time now. They want something. Being stuck in his basement doesn't give you a whole lot of opportunities to change the subject, for example. Do you think there's a pick that he could make that could change the topic? Or do you think that this is going to be enough that maybe the Democratic establishment sort of encourages him to say, maybe it's not your time, Joe?
I think that the only possible pick he could make now that would be wow and really take the country's attention is one that I think is extremely unlikely to happen, and that's Michelle Obama. And if it did happen in this context, it would look a little bit desperate. It would look like an attempt to change the subject. Actually, really any Veep pick would at this point, but that one I think would especially look desperate. But I think they've mishandled the Veep thing too. I think that it was a mistake to say beforehand that it was going to be a woman, even if it had to be a woman politically. That's an argument, it seems to me, for, you know, you pick whoever it is, Tammy Baldwin, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, whoever, and say, you know, this is the best person I could find for it. And, you know, the fact that that she's a woman is even better. But you don't say, well, it's the best woman I could find.
Right.
It's already ruled out most politicians.
Well, you already have someone like Stacey Abrams saying not only does it have to be a woman, it has to be a woman of color, and preferably a black woman, because we are such a loyal voting bloc for the Democratic. They really fall into their own traps. Frankenstein's monster always returns to the castle. And no matter how woke you are, you're never going to be woke enough. Is Joe Biden ever going to excite the Democratic base?
You know, I think that he's got to bank on the idea that he can get a lot of the loyal Democrats out there, you know, with an anti-Trump argument, and try to win back some Obama-Trump voters. And there's just sort of, you know, if he can't make that kind of sale, I don't think that this is going to go anywhere in the first place.
Dealing with the coronavirus in the campaign, first of all, this is a weird campaign where nobody can leave their house so far. But you have a situation where the president is the president, and he's getting criticism for the way he's handled some things and not handled other things, and some things he's handled particularly well. But how does a Biden campaign run against a sitting president in the midst of an emergency without seeming like a bunch of, forgive the terminology, but a bunch of nitpicking assholes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it is a problem, right? Because you as the challenger have no power, and all you're doing is the Monday morning quarterbacking. And I think you've got to, in a sense, just sort of accept that situation and make the best of it. And I think that the way you do this, and it's easier to say than to do, is by saying something like, I mean, the part of the message of your campaign has to be, look, if you're tired of hearing from the president all day, every day, you're not going to from me. Like, make me president and you're never going to have to hear from me again. And just make a virtue out of that kind of a front porch campaign. Make it part of your appeal.
Vote for me, it'll be like Wilson after his stroke, but before he died, you'll never see me again. Ramesh, I want to ask you one last question just to make a prediction so we have you on record. Come November 4th, what do you got?
Oh my goodness, this is a less predictable election than usual. I think you've got a narrowly Democratic Senate and President Biden.
Don't want to wake up in that world. Ramesh Ponnaru, National Review and American Enterprise Institute and all of that. Thanks for the time today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Now, along the lines of Joe Biden and Brett Kavanaugh, David Rutz over at the Washington Free Beacon, he's one of the best montage makers. I assume this guy eats, sleeps, dreams, wakes up screaming about cable news because he manages to remember. I don't know how he catalogs this stuff, but he catalogs all this stuff. He's a one-man media research center. He put together a little 58-second montage of Democrats, elected Democrats, Senate Democrats, and then at the end there's a familiar voice that you might recognize who used to be a Senate Democrat. Then he went on to something else. I forget what it is. All talking about how the allegations against Brett Kavanaugh are relevant and don't require much proof or any proof whatsoever. There's no need for due process or presumption of innocence because interviewing or getting a confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court is like interviewing for a job. That's what it is. It's not a court of law. It is the court of public opinion. And so you people whining about how he's being treated unfairly just need to shut the hell up, because we're not talking about throwing him in jail. We're just talking about ruining his life. The last voice in particular is very interesting, shall we say. So let's listen to 58 seconds of Democrats talking about things that they all wish they had never, ever said.
People keep talking about presumption of innocence. That is a term one uses in a criminal proceeding. It is a job interview.
It's not a criminal trial. It's more like a job interview.
This isn't a criminal trial. This is a job interview for the highest court in the land.
This is about whether he has the privilege to serve on the highest court of the land. This is not a court of law. This is a job interview.
It's a job interview. For Judge Kavanaugh. Is he the best we can do?
It's not about a condemnation or a criminal trial about Kavanaugh's guilt or innocence. This is a job interview.
Well, it's a job interview, Harris. It's not a court of law.
Supreme Court hearing is not a trial. It's a job interview. Mm-hmm. It's a job interview. And you don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt anything.
You don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt anything. He sounded a little Bill Cosby-esque there, didn't he? You don't have to prove anything except for that you like the Puddin' Pops. Mm-hmm-hmm. Yes, that's Sniffy Joe himself right there at the end. Isn't that kind of weird? Isn't that kind of interesting? Oh, the irony. Oh, the joy and the pain. Poor Joe. All these people have things in their past that are the exact opposite of what they are saying now and what they've been saying all along about different things. The difference is, in this case, Republicans are pretty consistent. There aren't really many Republicans out there beating the drum. Joe Biden did this. Joe Biden needs to step down. Joe Biden resigns. Actually, the people saying that Joe Biden needs to go are some of the more left-wing progressive aspects of the Democratic Party, not the, you know, the mainstream of the party, not the people who could actually do anything about it. They're just saying that we didn't want Joe. Here's our chance to dump him. Lord knows what else is out there. Joe, you know, isn't really a reliable witness. He can't remember what in the hell he was talking about. But I find it interesting that all of these people, it's job interview. You don't have to prove anything. Doesn't really matter. What's the big deal, man? What's the big deal? Well, it's your own medicine. You've got to take it. You made it. You got to take it. If you don't like it, you probably shouldn't have made it as a suppository. Just saying. Lastly today, I want to talk a little bit about this. It's nice to not talk about coronavirus every single day, but there is coronavirus news because they're out with new models, right? They're saying that they're revising the death totals up again. All the old models that had the 2 million and then the 1 million and the 200,000, the models are itching back up again. Why? Because we've crossed the line that they'd drawn before. I don't have a problem with models being in existence. I have a problem with models being the basis for policy making when they've proven to be so wildly wrong. Originally, there should have been several hundred thousand people dead by now. All sorts of things. They've been way off on the number of hospitalizations and the number of ventilators needed. Now the CDC has a model. They say there could be 3,000 daily deaths by June. What if that doesn't work out? the NH or IHME model up at the University of Washington. They revised their numbers up now to like 120,000 dead. And forgive me if I look at this with cynicism. Not that there aren't going to be people to continue to die from this, especially when the governmental standard is, if you think they had it, go ahead and say they had it. Because the problem with that is, and I've talked about this on my radio show, and I think I've talked about that on this show as well, the real problem is, when it comes to making decisions in the future, you need to have as accurate data as humanly possible so that you can get it right. You want to base future actions on what happened in the past. And if you have a bastardized view of what happened in the past, you can't make accurate moves in the future at all. You're screwed up. You're working off bad data. You'll never figure out a math problem or the air. You know, you need to go and buy a couple of pieces of wood to fit in someplace. And you call home and say, what's the size of that? And I'll buy some wood to fill it. And they give you numbers that are way off. You're never going to be able to fill it with the wood that you got. You're going to have too much wood left over. You're going to waste money, or you're not going to have enough wood. You're going to have to go back and buy wood. If you try to learn from the past, you have to accurately know what happened in the past. And right now, we're the future's past. God, do that math in your head. And so we're looking at a situation where in the future, if there's another, when there's another pandemic, and they try to figure out how did they do this last time, they're going to have a skewed view. Now, we don't have very good data from the 1918 Spanish flu because it was 1918. Nobody was keeping track of anything, not in the way that they are now. So it's understandable that we don't have particularly good data from then. But we have no excuse now other than laziness, other than a political agenda to drive up numbers and just say, well, if somebody you think had COVID-19, just go ahead and say it, and don't test them, don't worry about it, it doesn't matter, just go ahead and count them. And the government incentivizes paying a little bit more for having a COVID death rather than any other kind of death. You've incentivized a bastardizing of the data, making the data worthless going forward. It's so screwed up. So right now we're at almost 69,000 dead. Realistically, it's probably closer to 60. I wouldn't say that the discrepancy is huge. I wouldn't say half the people didn't have it. But that's a more than 10, it's a greater than 10% miss, and a greater than a miss that big of like 12, 15%, whatever it is, can really screw up the data. So going forward, we're screwing up the future by being lazy. And now we're trying, the media wants people scared to death because that'll keep people tuning in. The Democrats want people scared to death because that will make them less likely to vote for Donald Trump. And everybody is just sort of flitting along, not really noticing that we're being governed by models again that have been wildly wrong in the past. I could tell you the entirety of the field and how it will finish in every Kentucky Derby ever, if I can tell you after the race is run. You want me to predict the future? I've got a long shot chance, just, you know, as good as anybody else has drawn names out of a hat does. And so many of these models have proved to be just like that. And that is no way to govern or be governed. It leads to protests. You say that there's going to be 3 million people in the hospital starting next week, and there's nowhere near 3 million people in the hospital starting next week, but you've told people you're basically under a house arrest until, you know, you say so because of those numbers. People start to get a little pissed off about that. And a pissed off mob leads to bad things happening. Our government, be it the president, be it Congress, be it CDC, be it anybody in government, and our media need to start being more realistic, Talk about what's happening now. Nobody knows the future. Nobody has been anywhere close to what is happening and going to happen in the future. Deal with what's happening on the ground. We can deal, we can handle the truth. But the more BS governors and the president and Fauci and Burks and anybody else, and it doesn't matter what official title they have or what position they hold, the more they're wrong, the less likely anybody will be to ever want to listen to them again. And there may come a time when we do need to listen to them again. Does the boy who cried wolf not mean anything to these people? Andrew Cuomo out there screaming, we need 40,000 ventilators or everybody's going to die, lost a lot of credibility with people in the state of New York. Not outside of the state of New York, because it wasn't really covered outside of the state of New York, because he's, you know, the anti-Donald Trump, and they just pretended it didn't happen. Everything has an impact. There's nothing wrong with saying you don't know, or just simply saying you're concerned. The outlook doesn't look good. It could get bad. We could be wrong. But you're not going to get a lot of credibility talking about with certainty about what's going to happen in the future when you have a long history of not winning any lotteries at all. That's just my two cents. Well, you know what? Speaking of lotteries, just because I mentioned it, I love this story. This guy in Colorado, he won two $1 million jackpots on the same day because he played the same numbers. Daily Caller, Colorado man won two $1 million lottery prizes on the same day while using the same numbers. The man, identified only as Joe B., has been playing the same numbers for 30 years, according to a Republican. You know, I would not play the same. I don't. When I occasionally do play the lottery, I consider it a kind of an idiot tax. When you, I would never play the same numbers all the time, though. Why? Because the time it's crappy, rainy, or snowing, you don't feel like going and getting a ticket because you forgot to. That'd be when it hits, and I would just be pissed off. I would never, ever be able to do that. Winning tickets were sold to Joe B. from two different locations, one at a 7-Eleven, the other at a Loafin' Jug. What's a Loafin' Jug? Sounds like a party. He bought one in the morning and the other in the evening, according to the Colorado Lottery Commission. Joe B. was able to claim his winnings at a drive-thru claims office in Pueblo, Colorado. Remember when I was a kid, everything was located in Pueblo, Colorado? The new office was open, blah, blah, blah. The story is crazy. I've always wanted to win the lottery, but I can't imagine. Can you imagine? You buy two tickets, same numbers, and it hits. $1 million a piece. It ain't the jackpot. You didn't win the, you know, 100 million or whatever it's up to. But I'd be content with, because you'd net at least over a million after, even after government comes in and sucks the life out of your victory. Don't let government suck the life out of your victory. We're out of time for today, ladies and gentlemen, but we'll be back tomorrow. Don't worry, you can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. And what day is today? It's Tuesday. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Tomorrow's Wednesday already? Damn, it's going fast. I'll see you then.
Supreme Court hearing is not a trial. It's a job interview. Mm-hmm. It's a job interview. And you don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt anything.